Good afternoon and welcome to Treble Clef Live. I'm Lee Swansburn. For the next hour, we are unplugged and authentically indie. Today in the studio, we have Russian singer-songwriter Marina V, band members Nick Baker and Marina V. I'm going to try this. Dobro pozdravlyat na nashi show.
Wow, that's so cool. Spasiba.
Welcome to the show. I attempted it.
That's perfect. Thanks.
First of all, congratulations on your album, My Star. For me, it's probably one of the most captivating angelic albums I've heard in a long time. What was the inspiration for you behind this album?
Oh, wow. First of all, thank you so much for saying that. These songs have, some of them I've had for years and some of them were brand new. There was really no one inspiration for the album. It's just they came together and we call it My Star because of we felt the song My Star represented kind of the vibe of the album. And so there's no one big.
What's it, one main inspiration behind the album?
There are many.
Okay, there's many. Okay, when it comes to financing albums, I think you're probably one of the most creative artists on the planet right now. Pretty much every one of your albums has been funded by your fans, correct? Including this one.
That's very true, yes.
How do you make that possible?
It's hard to say, really. I just, I do what I do, and I often reach out to my fans and just ask them. For example, with this album, I really, really wanted to record with a great producer in Hollywood who's worked with incredible bands like Gypsy Kings, and I'm a huge Gypsy Kings fan. And I didn't have my own money as an indie artist. I didn't have 30 grand to do it myself. So I reached out to my fans and just asked them, I would love to record my new album. If you'd like to help, I'd be eternally grateful. And I am. And they came through. So we raised almost 30,000. It's incredible.
It's like a new phenomenon we're seeing in the music scene. Like that was very common with movies. I remember in the 80s with the Australian movie Crocodile Dundee, no one would finance that movie.
Really?
So
wow.
Paul Hogan actually went public and took donations.
I didn't know that. That's incredible.
To finance that film. And now we're actually seeing it with indie music. It's actually becoming rather common. But when I read that all of your albums have been fan-financed, well done. That's a loyalty that a lot of the labels, actually bands don't have.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Do you have any personal favorite songs from the album?
No, you know, it's hard to, I mean, they're all, obviously, that better be my favorites if I put them on the album. It's hard to say. It really depends on my mood or the day of the week, I guess. I don't know. They're all personal and they all feel wonderful in different ways. So I hope people will enjoy all of them as well.
So the question that artists hate to be asked, but I'll go there. Who do you get compared to?
I get compared to, well, I'm a redhead. So just for the hair alone, I get compared to every redhead from Lorena McKenna to obviously Tori Amos, whom actually I love very much. And to Jewel, to Sarah McLachlan, to Enya. So basically female singers. Oh, even I get Joan Baez.
Really?
I get a spectrum of female artists. Maybe never Janis Joplin because I'm obviously not very growly. I wish I could have the cool raspiness in my voice, but I get that only when I'm really sick.
What's one of the most unrealistic comparisons you've ever heard about your music? Because we find these rather comical.
Most unrealistic, Nick, any suggestions, any thoughts? Something really crazy. Yeah, we've had someone's, maybe I'll come back to it, but someone's, yeah, let me think about this one because we've had a number of just really like, really? Cool, thank you. You know, people mean it as a compliment usually, so sometimes it's really funny.
Actually, I was listening to your album over the weekend and two artists actually came to mind for me. Okay. It was actually Sarah Brightman.
Okay.
And Touches of Mandalay. Have you heard of Mandalay?
No.
Go get a copy of one of Mandalay's albums. It's just mainly because of your voice. It's so trained, but it's a beautiful sound. So
cool. Thank you.
All right. With that being said, let's hear a song from your album, My Star.
Perfect. And we'll start with a song called My Star. All right. And this song is about unconditional love.
Thank you.
flames they die, and candles flicker, it rains, it shines, the pace it quickens, and you and I, we just don't speak enough. Days are weeks, and weeks are months, friends may leave, but don't give up. Be there when it's dark. You'll see that when the sun goes down, I'll be there if you fall, my star, most beautiful. And when the sun goes down, flowers bloom and flowers wither, winter snow becomes a river, and you and I are blowing in the wind wildly. But when the sun goes down, I'll be there if you fall, my still most beautiful. Flames, they die, and candles flicker, it rains, it shines, the pace it quickens, and you and I will find there's light enough. You'll see that when the sun beautiful of all, my star, most beautiful of all.
KPCRadio.com, we have Marina V in the house singing songs from her album Meister. Marina, you were born and raised in Russia, correct?
Yes, Moscow.
Moscow. What was it like growing up for you in Russia as a child, as opposed to maybe growing up in America? Paint a picture for American listeners, actually foreign listeners, who may have no idea what that would be like growing up in Russia.
Moscow, first of all, is a huge city. It's like New York City in a way, very busy, very crazy. But I grew up in the time when the Soviet Union fell apart, and it was the craziest time in the recent history in Russia. We had a few attempted coup d'etats, and we saw tanks on the street, and my father, who is a nuclear physicist, was getting paid $100 a month, or sometimes didn't have a salary for a while, like for half a year, and he had to go get a second and a third job. So we had enough food to eat. We had one change of clothes, maybe ate meat once every, five, six weeks. Although if we were vegetarians, that would have been fine. But we weren't, and we didn't get enough nutrition.
It wasn't by choice.
It wasn't by choice. And so it was very, very strange time. And especially psychologically, was as a kid, for me and my generation, it was really odd to be in that midst of the craziness, for example. Just, for example, last year, all the teachers would tell us, yes, communism is great, Stalin is great, Lenin is great, you know, everything outside of Soviet Union is, you know, evil empire. And then just a few months later, the teacher still told us, well, everything we told you before was total BS. It's actually not true. We had to say that because it was a crazy regime and we were forced to say that, but actually everything you learned is untrue. And it was, you know, when you were 10 or 11, that was kind of a little bit screwing with your mind.
Yeah, that's really a mind trip for a child, like what's real and what's not real. If that's not real, well, what else isn't real?
And it was also hard for somebody like my dad, who was a true believer in the system. He didn't, you know, for him, that when that collapsed, it's kind of his whole world collapsed. And so it was hard for everyone involved. So I think having lived through that and not having many things and having a lot of just grand things happen in the country made me grow up a lot faster and maybe be a little bit just, I don't know, what's what I'm looking for? Just not as naive as I would have been if I lived like in a happy country where nothing was happening, which actually a lot of my my peers in America when I came to high school, you know, they had never thought of things like that. They and anyway, it was just kind of interesting way to grow up, and I'm glad I did because now I appreciate things that I have.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk to you more about going to high school in America, because even for me growing up in Australia, prior to 1980, when the Olympics were in Moscow, we really had no concept of what Russia was. It's not something that we're really educated about. So my idea of Russia prior to the Olympics was Cossack soldiers dancing, Genghis Khan singing that song Moscow, which ended up being for the... I mean, it really is ridiculous. And vodka. I mean, really, we had no concept of any type of thing that was going on in Russia. And what was really going on when you were growing up, it wasn't really being reported how people were truly suffering. They didn't really show that in the media, so we will talk more about that later, but I think foreigners have no idea of how that really affected the Russian people at that time, which is why I'm going to bring that up later with you. But when did you first learn piano as a kid growing up in Russia?
I was about 4 years old, and my grandma in her apartment had an upright piano, and she played very little, and she taught me everything she knew. And
she played little, but taught me everything she knew.
That's how I got started. So thanks to my grandma.
And is it true that you went to an after-school music program or a music school?
Yes, it was a music school every day after regular school, when all the kids went home and went outside and played and did their things. I went to a second school, so I was the nerdiest of the nerds. And for a while, I totally resented my mom for making me do that. But I'm very grateful to her now because I think it was a good thing. At that point, it certainly didn't seem like a good thing.
No, was it one of those music schools, you even have them over here, where the music schools tend to be more conservative and very strict by the book, or was it more of a music school where you could be a little bit more creative and have room to explore your own sense of what music was for yourself?
Oh, it was very much by the book. It was so much by the book that, first of all, if I made, you know, a mistake playing a classical piece. It was only classical music, only classical. No pop, no jazz, no blues, nothing, just classical. And if I play a wrong note, my teacher would smack my hand. And then I started writing songs when I was very little. And when I was about 10 or 11, my mom thought we should seek professional opinion. So she actually told my piano teacher, said, my daughter, did you have any idea that, you know, your student composes songs and sings and does, and my teacher didn't know that. So we made an arrangement and I came and I played a couple of my songs for my piano teacher. And at that point, I didn't know that was happening, but the piano teacher took my mom aside and said, you know, those songs are wrong. And the word she used was, what was it? something like they don't make sense, something of that sort. And my mom, who's not musical, she's like, well, how, what does it even mean? Mm. And basically piano teacher said, you know, it's not really good or something of that sort. And, but she didn't tell it to my face. She told my mom. Then we went home, like, what did she say? What did she say? You know, and my mom said, well, you know, and that was kind of crazy. So it was, but the funny thing, the piano teacher came to my concert in Moscow 3 years ago and loved the performance. I was, I'm so proud of you. And to me, that was just like, confusing because
it's another mind trip.
She probably didn't remember. I bet you she didn't remember what she told my mom when I was a kid, but now she's very proud. But at that point, I was so disappointed and just really, really, I don't know, heartbroken in a way, because even though I hated my piano classes, I still respected her. So she was a great pianist. Yeah. Anyway, so it was a very rigid school of music and very opposite of. The freedom you hear musicians grow up like, oh, we were jamming and we were doing this and that. I'm like, I didn't do any of that.
So outside of music school, did you get to have like a, whatever a normal childhood is like, to play some sports and be outside and play with the other kids, or you were just mainly knuckled down behind the piano practicing?
Thankfully, no, I wasn't knuckled down. And I'm not, I would never be a concert pianist because I never had the 8 hours a day piano playing.
Gotcha.
But I did figure skating for a while, then I did karate as a kid, and also did a lot of skiing in winter. Cross-country skiing is quite popular in Russia. And in the summers, actually, we had summers off, and my dad built a little shack outside of Moscow. We had an outhouse. So 3 months out of the year we spent outside of Moscow near the forest and the lake and just running around, kind of being in the wild. So I thankfully got to be a normal kid for 3 months out of the year.
And I was reading an article this morning. Is it true that you racked up the most penalties when you play ice hockey?
Yes. I was playing ice hockey here in America already when I was starting college, and I guess I was the person who racked up the most penalties. It was just so much fun. And in girls' hockey, they don't allow checking or all the stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
In America or in Russia?
Oh, no, in America. I never played hockey in Russia. I did figure skating in Russia. But when I came here, at least in the women's league that I was in Illinois, I think it was national thing. They did not allow body checking. They did not allow a lot of things that guys normally
Why?
Do.
What's the reason?
I don't know. I don't know. And
boots?
For me, that was part of the fun because you have all this protective gear. You can't really get hurt. And it's the funnest thing just to, you know, throw your weight onto somebody and smack them into the board. You know, that's just fun. And it's like part of releasing the madness inside of you. That's part of the fun of doing sports. So I did a lot of that and never scored anything.
But I hit a lot of people.
I was horrible. I didn't really hit, but I had fun. It was just mainly for fun. We weren't really trying to,
well, I have the
you
sport
know, to beat Wayne Gretzky.
Huh? I have the sport for you. It's called roller derby.
That scares me. See, they don't have as much protective gear. Because, first of all, when you fall on ice, you slide. When you fall on concrete, you kind of become all bloody and broken, and yeah. I really, really don't want that. And I have seen all the movies. Whippets, you know, and like, and all the specials they have about the roller derby here in LA. It scares me a little bit. Oh, those girls scare the crap out of me.
We may make a call and get you some padding and send you out into the rink with some pads, and you can just go to town. That may be fun to see, actually.
I don't know. We'll see about that. But I like the skating part because really you are so protected. You have all these pads, and when you fall, you slide, and it's just fun. I had so much fun playing hockey. So the roller derby thing, it's just a little bit. I'm a wimp. Sorry.
You sounded so bad and tough there for a second. Like,
nope,
no, I'm
not,
a wimp.
No, nope, not that tough.
All right. Well, let's hear another song from your album, The Tough Yet Tender, Marina V.
Say what's on your mind. Don't worry about consequence. Don't worry. time say what's in your soul? Tell me everything. I want to know. I won't turn my back on you. Won't turn my back on you. I'll listen carefully. I'll listen carefully.
Singing songs from her album Meister. Marina, you moved to America when you were 15. What was the main motive for you making that move?
I actually won an incredible scholarship sponsored by American government to come to this country as an exchange student and stay here for a year and represent my country. So people don't think, well, that was in the mid-90s, and my mission was just to be there and represent Russia, and so the students and the teachers, for that matter, would kind of get a glimpse of what former Soviet Union people are like. Sure. And they placed me in Springfield, Illinois, where I met Nick later. So I was on a little mission.
So you were like a diplomat or an ambassador?
Yes, cultural ambassador.
Ambassador. Mm-hmm. So at 15, what's it like moving to a foreign country, maybe having limited language ability with English and going to school? I mean, how do you make that adjustment? And what are some bigger adjustments you had to make upon touchdown in the U.S.?
Well, first of all, it was frightening because it was first time for me personally away from my family, away from my country, away from my language. And I spoke English somewhat because I took it for a few years. But in Russia, we learn English, British English.
Yeah.
And it's taught by teachers who are Russian, who have never been to, you know, at least at that point, they had never been outside of Russia. So they didn't have much contact with native speakers. And my English was funny.
It was. Give me an example of some Russian English when you first landed here.
Well, for example, you know, here how Americans say, like, I don't have this. Like, I have not this.
Nice.
Can you imagine a 15-year-old in a public high school? They thought I was a retard. They thought I was crazy. They thought I was just, like, from another planet. So it took me a few months to pick up the slang and to actually understand what people were saying. And teenagers, you know, can be cruel at times. So for a while, I had only very, very... I call them nerds, but they're my best friends. I'm a nerd myself, but people who are more patient than just, you know, popular kids in school didn't give me a second of their day in the beginning because they just couldn't understand what I was saying, and I couldn't understand what they were saying because they were speaking fast. With time, I got to know more English and the slang, and I started understanding, and I ended up having a lot of friends from every walk of life in my high school. It was actually really, really cool. It was hard at first.
Yeah, I think nerds are the future cool people in high school.
Absolutely.
They just don't know it yet. And we may have a bit of a hard time adjusting to the cool people in high school, but we become the cool people in our 20s and 30s. What was it like for you with the clothing? I have a couple of friends from Russia, and they said when they first moved here in the 90s that they felt just out of place with clothing because what they wore in Russia just didn't fit in American high schools. Did you find that as well?
Yes and no. First of all, I didn't have much, and my mom happened to go to America just a couple of years before I went, so she actually brought me a bunch of clothes, so thankfully I had some normal, quote-unquote, normal American-looking clothes, but... part of the scholarship that the American government gave me was little stipends so we could buy clothes. So that really the first day we landed in America, they took us to a shopping mall and they said, go shop, buy some normal looking things, which was so much fun. I had never had, I think it was like $100. Yeah. And I had, that's what my father was making like for a month and a half, you know, because of the... It was a crazy situation at that point. So I'm like, oh my God, $100.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
And in the classroom, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you found that maybe the teachers and students had about your homeland that you thought were just so way off base, but they weren't really educated?
Well, there was definitely propaganda on both sides. Like I mentioned earlier, in Russia, we were taught that everything outside of Soviet Union is pure evil, pretty much. They obviously were taught very similar things about Russia in former Soviet Union. So people just expected, I don't know why, for some reason, people's idea of a Russian girl would be just like somebody really burly and mustachy and just kind of like, you know, like a... Olympic sports person, you know, on steroids or something, or maybe like an old woman with a scarf or something, like
a babushka or something.
Yeah, and they just didn't. Most of them just said, "Wow, you look normal." Like, what did you expect? What do you expect me to look like? And that was the whole reason that program existed. So kids like me, who had never been outside of Russia, could go to America, to a town where people had never seen anybody Russian. So for most teachers and for all the students, I was the first Russian. And for some of them, it was the first foreign person they had ever met.
Oh, wow. So you really were an alien.
Absolutely. But... that was the whole point of the program. And by the end of the year, they added like a German student in that school and somebody from Brazil. So we were like little crazy foreign clique. But it was really neat because I think the program really worked because I was there and they saw that I was quote unquote normal and just like them. And by the end of the year, I spoke English well enough for them to feel like I'm just like one of them.
Gotcha.
So it was great. I think,
well, let's switch it back. You have a year in America in school. Now you go back to Russia. How do you make that switch going back to your homeland? Now you've had a year in America. Was that difficult for you? And did the Russian education system even acknowledge your year here academically?
No, they did not acknowledge my year at all. So when I went back to Russia, all of my friends were graduating. So I went to their graduation and cried because I couldn't graduate with them. Aww. And they told me I had to go extra year of school, basically like a year behind. Can you imagine when you're 16 and you're told you have to go with a class,
your
behind?
Life is over.
Yeah, I know. That felt like just pure death. So thankfully they let me, I begged the principal to let me study at home and take exams. So I went to like a different school and whatever it's called, the quick way of graduating, because I technically did spend a year studying. I didn't just slack off. So that was a bit weird. But mostly just having gone through living a year abroad, learning everything from zero almost, and meeting people and just kind of starting your life from zero in a way, that made me feel like I grew up even faster than my peers. And we had already grown up fast because of all the madness that happened in Russia. So even when I got back, I felt different than them. And I felt that it just... I don't know. It was odd. And I made so many good friends. And, you know, when you're 15, 16, you make friends and you just feel like they're everything to you. So I've made all these great friends in America, and I felt like I miss them so much and I want to go back. So I was really torn because I had all these friends I came back to in Russia and my family. And that same year, actually, my mom was divorcing my dad, and she told me she was moving to Australia. So I'm like, I did not expect that at all. That was interesting. So it was kind of my whole world was upside down. So, and that's when I made a decision that as soon as I graduate from school and take those exams, I would try to go make my way back to America.
All right. Well, let's take a time out and hear another song. I believe actually you're doing a Beatles cover. Correct?
Yes. I grew up just loving the Beatles. Ooh. And they were the first band that I heard that was not Russian. And I didn't know the Beatles were that huge. I just somebody gave me a tape, mixtape, and there were a few Beatles songs, and I didn't know they were called the Beatles. I just heard the songs, and I loved them, and I fell in love.
Because the Beatles were banned in Russia for many years, correct?
They were, yes. Yeah. I don't ask me why, but maybe whatever.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So no official records existed, or if they did, there were very, very few. So... anyway, so I'm going to do my version of a very famous Beatles song. I hope you like it.
Marina V.
To lead a better life, I need my... Oh. That is horrible. Can we edit this live? Just kidding. Okay. This never happened. Erase everybody's memory. 10 seconds. To lead a better life. I'm having a brain malfunction.
We have doctors on hand.
I think I need a doctor or Dr. Drea, whoever. There.
Take three.
You know what? Can I come back to the song later?
Of course you can.
This is absolutely horrible. There's something going on with the sound. Do you hear this? Oh, please don't step on the cable. That's what's happening. Okay. Sorry. Let's do a song that I do remember. You know, I have an excuse. I'm not... crazy. I do have good memory normally. We played very late last night. We played at Hard Rock Cafe Hollywood in three sets, and we got home really, really late and got up early today. So is that an excuse? Lee,
it's
can I use that an excuse?
Excuse?
Is that okay?
The Beatles will always be there.
I hope so. Anyway, so let's do a song that we do remember. You want to see You Make Me Beautiful? All right. By the way, I have Nick here, my co-writer. He writes all of these songs with me, and so he's accompanying me here on the guitar. I can't help hearing the lies. I can't help letting them inside. These words have gotten me low and got me high. Standing guard at my door, allowing me to be more than what they say, allowing me to to be strong and live my way. You make me beautiful, believing in me. Make me beautiful and deep within. I find the best side of myself. I know no one else makes me feel beautiful. Dreams are never too wild. My words are never laughed at or brushed aside. You make me feel like a star that's not outshined. You make me beautiful, believing in me. Make me beautiful.
Singing the song You Make Me Beautiful. I also believe that song took you to London this year to receive an award from Sir Bob Geldof. Is that correct?
Yes, that was so cool. The song You Make Me Beautiful just won this international song contest called You Bloom. And the final prize, we were grand finalists, and they flew us out. And there was also a cash prize as well, which was cool. And we performed and we got like a little award thingy, very cool, which actually they had a question about when we were flying back from London. They asked me what that was, and like they had extra security, like they had to swipe it.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like a little heavy, like glass and metal looking thing. And I guess they thought it was a weapon, which I guess it could be a weapon. So
she's a terrorist. She's bringing in contraband.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was interesting. But anyway, yeah, we got, and the award was presented to me by one of the celebrity judges who was one of the judges in that You Bloom contest, Sir Bob Geldof. And that was really cool.
What was it like meeting Mr. Boomtown Rat himself, Bob Geldof?
He was not rat-like at all, but no, he was absolutely cool. We hung out for a while, and he had a great sense of humor, very nice human being, and it was just an honor to get that word from him. And it was overall, I mean, I love London, so it was great to be back, and we even got a private tour of Parliament.
Oh, wow.
It was way cool.
That's great. Let's just go back to when you moved back to the States for the second time. You moved back to America when you were 17, correct?
Yes.
You saved up the money. You worked for Cadbury Schweppes. Did I read that right?
Yes, you did. Yes. Because I spoke really decent English at that point, and it was very crazy time in Russia. That's when my father was still working a second and a third job just to make ends meet. And I ended up getting this job, and I was getting paid several times more than my dad.
Is that because your English, you were so good?
When I got that job, I didn't even have my high school diploma, and was working for an international corporation, Cadbury Schweppes, you know, the Schweppes, the drink, and the Cadbury, the chocolate.
Yeah.
And I was assistant to a marketing director only because I was sociable and I spoke English well enough to do all the things I needed to do. And it was just, that's how crazy that was.
That's a big adjustment for your dad to make as a man, usually being the main breadwinner of a family.
It was very hard. It was a very difficult time for him. And that's when, at the same time, my mom divorced him. So my poor dad, oh.
Bless his soul.
he's a sweetheart, but he's a nuclear physicist. He's in his own world, too, so...
Is he still in Russia?
Yes, he is. And I just saw him. I was in Moscow 3 weeks ago. I just saw him and spent a lot of time with him. He's doing great.
Great. Wonderful.
Thank you for asking.
So you went to college here in the States. Was it to study music or some other type of field?
I did not study music anymore. they killed the spirit in Russia. But I did graduate from that school of music in Russia. I went for 8 years and that was enough. But so I decided just to try to learn something new. And being that I had worked in the corporate world, I thought, I'll try just to major in business and then in international politics. So I had a double major with a minor in Spanish. So.
Oh, wow. You speak Spanish.
Un poquito, sí.
Yeah, look at you. So that was back in Illinois, correct? You went to school in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And what led to the move to coming to Los Angeles?
Well, I've always been a big city girl. Moscow's a very big city. I wouldn't say it's not a really international. It's becoming it now, but it wasn't when I was growing up. It was just all Russians. But I've always felt the urge to be in the city. And when I started doing music seriously during my first year of college, when I was a freshman, I really knew that to do anything in the entertainment business, you have to be either New York or LA, and LA has the good weather.
Exactly. So coming to LA as a new independent artist, having no fan base, how do you come to LA not knowing anyone and get a fan base and start getting gigs when most clubs in LA will charge you to play, pay to play?
Yeah, that was something that I had to learn, because when we gigged quite a lot in Illinois, and often a bar would pay us like $100, you know, for the band, and we were happy. Mm-hmm. When I came here, you know, and I told people that's what's happening in the Midwest, they just laughed and said, that doesn't happen here unless maybe you're a cover band. I remember specifically I called a club, one of the venues where singer-songwriters in LA perform. I'm not going to mention which.
I could probably guess, but I won't.
I saw that one of the girls in my genre was performing then. She did really well. So I called the booker and said, hey, can I open for her? And he actually laughed at me on the phone. He just like, you're kidding, right? I'm like, no, because that's what people did in the Midwest. You know, people open for bands with bigger followings.
Yeah.
And he really just laughed at me and said, no, you can't. You have to bring your own like 25 or 30 paid fans that pay the door,
exactly.
Or else, you know, you can't really play here. I'm like, well, I don't know anybody in LA. How am I supposed to bring 30 people who would, you know, pay to see me when I don't even know one person?
Yeah.
And he said, well, you have to figure that out. Which wasn't very encouraging. I got off the phone and I was just, you know, kind of shocked. And I was never really much of an open mic person because, first of all, I'm a piano player. Most open mics don't have... keyboards. I never really did that. So I thought, what can I possibly do? So we tried to take any gig that didn't require any, you know, paid patrons. And that's when I met a gentleman by the name of Bob Leggett, who is big on the scene in Los Angeles in terms of he loves all the artists and he gives a lot of support. And he was booking Borders Books and Music at that point. And he said, oh, I would love to book in Borders Books and Music. And they didn't require any following, just show up and perform for 2 hours. And Nick and I ended up doing 125 Borders shows over a course of 2 years.
Good
Every
Lord.
Weekend, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday, all over Southern California, from San Diego to Santa Barbara, to Riverside, kind of that Southern California
that's
area.
That's a lot of work.
So if we did that, but I ended up having so many new listeners and so met so many incredible people. We you know, ended up selling a lot of CDs, even though those shows were not paid. We managed to make money, and it was wonderful, just a great experience, and I became a better performer, and it was just really, really great. And then I came back to the club, and I did really well.
So we can say you have your border education. Right, it's time of the show. We do what we call double down. You do two songs back to back of your choice, and if you'd like to introduce the song and maybe give a little history or how the song came to fruition, please feel free.
Perfect. Maybe I'll play a Russian song. Do you think you'd like to hear a Russian song?
I would love to hear a Russian song.
I'll play a song that's I wrote, being that I do live really far away from my family. My mom now lives in Australia, and my dad is still in Moscow, and my brother and my grandpa. I really miss them, and that was one of the hardest things I had to do, just to leave them. And so a couple of years ago, I wrote a song just letting them know that I'm always thinking about them. They're always in my heart, even though we're really far away from each other. So, and this is a song. It's called «Песня о тебе», which means «Song about you». And funny enough, it was just recently used in a film. Remember Rocky IV?
Yeah.
And there was like the evil Russian guy who almost killed Rocky, Dolph Lundgren, the actor. And the song was just used in a movie with Dolph Lundgren as the lead. So
why is it always the evil Russian in movies? I mean, we need to change that.
You know, even now we just watched, what did you just watch? Limitless, a film, like brand new, we just went to the theater to see it, and the bad guys were Russian. Like, come on, you know, it's 2011, people, you know.
They never have the bad Australian films.
We need some evil Australian guy for a change, right?
We do.
You know, it's like really unfair. All right, anyway. Не держи, не держи на меня зла. Хотя я знаю, что ты все простил. Если б я могла тебе все сказать, если б я могла тебе все объяснить, а вокруг тишина, только сердце стонет в груди. Если б ты только знал, помню о тебе, о тебе. Ты совсем, совсем мне чужой, хотя я знаю тебя всю жизнь. Если б я могла тебе все сказать, если б я могла твои раны зашить, а вокруг тишина, если б ты только знал, что я помню, помню о тебе, о тебе. right. So this was, if anybody tuned in the middle of a song and wondering what language that is, that's Russian. And my name is Marina V. And you wanted to, do you think I should do Ghost Wandering This Earth or Sunshine Guaranteed? All right. Nick is voting for a song called Sunshine Guaranteed, which is from my last album, but it's super fun. I think it's the happiest song I've ever written. I think it's the happiest song anybody has ever written. because I write all my songs and they have all deep meaning and they come from, you know, places in my heart that are, you know, they have some, you know, deep emotions and a lot of meaning. And this song has neither deep emotions nor meaning. Well, it has a happy meaning. It's I just wanted to write a really, really happy song, and I think it succeeded. And on the last album, Modern Fairy Tale, we actually recorded this that whole album at Graham Nash's house. Graham Nash from Crosby, Stills and Nash. And it was such an honor. And the song has kind of 60s-ish feel about it, and we used his guitar, his green Gretsch from that he still has from the 60s, which was so cool. So on the recording, it sounds kind of like a little bit authentic-ish 60s. So anyway, this song is called Sunshine Guaranteed, the happiest song ever. All right, 2, 3, 4.
Sunshine Guaranteed, oh, Sunshine Guaranteed. When I'm with you, I don't need no umbrella. I don't need no coat, 'cause every time we're together, I know I won't get cold. When you're with me, the sunshine guaranteed, sunshine guaranteed, yeah, sunshine together, it's the opposite of pain. When you're with me, the sunshine guaranteed, sunshine guaranteed, yeah, sunshine guaranteed, sunshine guaranteed. When you're with me, clouds disappear, the sky is always clear, and I know, oh, I could hide neath the wings of a bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring.
KPCRradio.com, we have Marina V and the Monkees making a special appearance on the show today. That is one of the happy songs I've ever heard, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
Without a doubt. We have time for one more song, but before we go, I just want to talk to you more about this year, 2011. What do you have coming up? I know you have the Hard Rock Cafe residency. If you could just tell the listeners a little bit about that and when you're actually playing.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's just today, it's me and Nick, but at the Hard Rock Cafe at Hollywood and Highland, right next to the world-famous Kodak Theater. We will be playing every Sunday in April. The show is actually free, and it's all ages. And last night, we had actually a few kids there, so it was really fun. And it's a gorgeous space, and this right next to the stage, there's this big display of Jim Morrison's pants.
So wonderful.
Even if you don't want to come see the band, come see the pants. So, no, but you got it. I hope people will come and check it out. Being it's free and it's wonderful. And
what time does the show start?
It's 8 o'clock every Sunday in April. It's at Hollywood and Highland Hard Rock Cafe. And they can always check out more information at marinav.com, which is my website. And people who don't live in California and would like to, you can still check out the website, and you can get 4 free downloads of my songs at my website. So,
okay, and for our out-of-state listeners, do you have any tours coming up both in America and internationally? I know you're going to a music festival. It's one of the biggest ones on the planet.
Yeah, correct? I'll be playing in Summerfest in Milwaukee in July, and then we have some shows on the East Coast. Nick and I will be in Arizona in 5 days in Tucson. We just played in London and Russia. We don't have any international dates planned as of now. We might be going to Singapore in September, but that is not confirmed yet. So, yeah, marinav.com, that's probably the best place to check out all the tour dates. And,
Yeah. With that being said, I just want to thank both Nick and Marina for coming in. It was truly a pleasure and an honor to have you and just to talk about your life and share your artistry. It's truly been a pleasure. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much, Lee. I really appreciate it.
Okay, one more song. Take us out.
I guess I'll do maybe one of my older songs. Do you care, Nick? He's just hanging out here. I think I might do a song called Ghost Wandering This Earth. It's from my Simple Magic album, which is currently out of print, but it's on iTunes. Anyway,
Marina B.
One step forward, 100 steps behind. I guess my progress hasn't gone quite right. Taking pills and reading books to just escape the day. What can I say? Hey, maybe I am lost. Maybe I am scared to see. Maybe.
Scared to see.